Katie, and you're listening to the Home Ed Voices podcast, where I talk to people about their home education adventures and experiences here in the UK. This is episode 20, and this week I'm talking to Ashley from Wildwood Childhood. We talk about home educating alongside a sibling in school, home edding foundation in year one on a very small budget, and the fear of missing out and how it can mess with your confidence and cost you money. And now, on with the episode. This week I'm talking to Ashley from Wildwood Children. Thank you very much for coming on.
Hello, thank you.
Right, let's start the questions. Tell me a bit about your family.
Sure. So, as you said, I'm Ashley. I have two children. I have my daughter, Quinn, who has recently turned four. She was four in July. So she is the equivalent of a reception age child now. And we have her at home. We also have my son, Seb, who is nine, who is in school. He is in our local mainstream village school. So we have one of each at the moment, which is probably going to be our long-time setup. We fully intend to home educate Quinn for, well, the duration of her school career, if she is willing, but certainly until seven is kind of the first point at which I'm willing to see how we're getting on and see where things are going. But yeah, Seb will probably be staying in school, so it's not ideal, but it's working for us at the moment.
You don't have to talk about your decision, but do you want to talk about your decision to have them in different
places? No, I'm pretty open about it. It's not a problem at all. When Seb started school, so he started school at the typical after his fourth birthday, and it was very much a case of, right, so my child is four and now I have to look at schools and pick a school and do the school application, and I just wasn't really I didn't know any home educating families at the time, so everybody around me with children was going through exactly the same sort of process, and the conversations were just about schools and what schools are you looking at, what schools are you considering, etc. And whilst I was aware that home education was a thing, it certainly wasn't something that I'd considered, because I'd never, ever seen it in practice, and I didn't know anybody around me that was considering it. It wasn't a concept that I'd grown up with at all. I didn't know any home educated children growing up. And so I'd never considered that not sending him to school was an option.
Yeah.
And so we just went through that process as we do. By the time... so Seb's father, my ex-husband, and I separated whilst he was a year into school, and I then met my current partner and subsequently fell pregnant, and we had Quinn. By that point, the social circle around me had changed quite dramatically. I now knew several families who were home educating, which had completely blown my mind, because up until that point I was very much of the assumption that you were teaching national curriculum at home,
yeah,
9 till 3, like, and I couldn't understand why anyone would want to do that. it completely blew my mind to meet home educating families and see it in practice, and I had people around me sort of like right at the kind of radical unschooling end, yeah, of the spectrum, all the way through to people who did have a much more structured approach. But just seeing that variety and being like, wow, okay, I had no idea that this was even like legal, really, really opened my mind to it. And by the time Prim was still a baby, really, I was just like, I don't have to send her to school. And that was a massive realization that I could make other choices, because it just hadn't even occurred to me before. And the more we looked into it, the more we're just like, no, absolutely, this is what we want to do. By the time we got to this year, where she would, in theory, have started reception, we'd swung in completely opposite direction, that sending her to school just wasn't an option. We were so set on it. But Seb, as a kind of separate situation, he's just gone into year five, so this is like his penultimate year of primary school, and he is his school experience hasn't been really unpleasant for him at all. So we haven't had any experience of any of the horrors that you might expect from school, of say bullying or really horrible experiences of discipline and behavioural policies, things like that. Hasn't really been an issue. But it has, whilst I've looked into home education more and more over the last few years, I've realised just how sort of uninspiring his time has been, I guess might be the right word, but it doesn't light a fire in his belly at all. He goes in, he sees it as something he needs to get through, and he comes out the other end. He's not a child who I would describe as he loves school, but he's also not deeply unhappy. And my ex-partner and I have very different ideas about home education. He is still very much of the idea that it's absolutely nuts and not an option. So there's that element to it as well, which is separate. But until he was desperately unhappy, if he was saying to me he wanted to be at home, he didn't want to go into school, if I was dealing with a child who was really anxious and upset and, you know, crying in the morning because they didn't want to go in, yeah, I'd whip him out in an instant. You know, I would happily deregister tomorrow and deal with the consequences as and when they arose. But for now, he doesn't want to be home educated. He's happy to go into school. He's very used to school. So at the moment, we're not in a position where we kind of feel like it's necessary per se to pull him out. But it's a never say never.
Oh, yeah.
But for now, we're kind of half and half. I do wonder, I'm curious to see, as his sister kind of, because she's only four.
Yeah.
So what she does on a day-to-day basis, say from last year to this year, doesn't look hugely different from anybody on the outside, because
no,
we're sort of taking it pretty slow, and she's not even compulsory school age at the moment, so yeah, we can afford to be relatively relaxed about things. But I am curious to see how his interest peaks, perhaps, as we go on with her. But by then, he's going to be in secondary school. It's such an unknown.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that it was a decision to have one in each. It's just kind of how life has worked out sometimes.
I was gonna say, but it seems like a product of the circumstances.
Exactly, yeah. It wasn't it, and quite often I say, oh, you know, we've got one at home and one in school, and people's automatic response is, ah, well, you know, certain things don't suit certain children, and you know your children best, and you know what's best for them. And it's like, it wasn't really a decision that was made because I think school is best for him and home education is best for her. I'm very much of the mind that if you're in a position to home educate, which of course not everybody is,
yeah,
then you are probably, whoever you are and whatever your background is, you are probably in a position to provide an extremely incredible level of education for your kids. So it's not that I think school is better for him or better for her. It's just the way things have worked out, and we're just rolling with it at the moment and seeing how it pans out more than anything.
It's, I know that the idea of a person being on a journey has become this massive cliche, but like, as parents, and as parents who, you know, I mean, I'm sure it happens for all parents, but as parents who end up home educating, it is a journey. Do you know what I mean?
And you don't know. It's a little bit like when people ask you how long you're going to home educate for. And for us, like, I would happily go all the way through. Like,
yeah.
I, you know, secondary school, I'm down with, I'll do it. I'm quite excited about it.
Yeah.
But I can't say, oh, well, we're definitely going to, because I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And equally, you know, I couldn't say, well, we're just going to go to seven and then put her in at year three. I don't know. I have no idea. And I know how I'd like it to look. But yeah, it's impossible to predict. And it will be as impossible to predict whether he stays in school for the duration as it will to predict whether she stays at home for the duration. We're just going to see how it pans out.
Well, the thing is, it's like, you don't know how it pans out until it's panned out. Like, nobody knows how it's going to pan out, you know. Like, I've known families who home educated and then their circumstances changed, or their children wanted to go into school and they went into school. And some of them, yeah, they go into school and they stay in school. And for some people, they go into school for a bit and then they come out again.
Do you know what I mean? Satisfied my curiosity. It's not for me. I'm coming back home. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know. You know, yeah. you don't know what you'll have done until you've done it, if you know what I mean. Exactly. Which isn't to say that people do things rashly, or, you know, like, yeah. you make the decisions you need to make at the time you need to make them.
Yeah, and if you send children to school and you end up bringing them home, it doesn't mean that school was a complete failure. And equally, if you have children at home and they end up going to school, it doesn't mean that home education didn't work. circumstances change, and your family's values change, and all sorts of things can happen. So I always say to people, especially when I talk to people who are kind of like undecided and not sure which way they're going to go, you can always take them out of school. Once they're in, they're not stuck there. And equally, if you have them at home, school's not going anywhere. It's always going to be there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we try and keep it quite kind of fluid, and we remain open-minded about how things are going to pan out. I have Quinn's dad has two boys who are much older, so they are 15 and 19 now, so they have been through the whole system. One's doing his GCSEs and the other one is about to start his degree in a couple of weeks. And so it's interesting for us as a couple as well to have children who have always been in the school system to now be a point in life where we're kind of exploring something else.
Yeah.
It's just a really exciting time for us, I think, because we're so over the school thing. We've done it a lot. It's just we're still really excited about it, and there's probably a huge amount of naivety we're still very fresh faced and everything is very lovely, and aren't we lucky to be doing this, and I'm sure we'll become hardened off as the years go by, but I hope not, but yeah, there's not a lot of reality has sunk in yet, really. We're just having a really lovely time, so I don't really want to kind of put limits on that now and suggest what things are going to look like later. We'll see.
Well, no, because home education grows and changes,
exactly,
over time. Do you know what I mean? And you don't. And the nice thing is, when you start, you don't have to know what it's. I mean, like, you don't have to know what it's going to look like in 3 years' time.
No, I don't have a clue.
or 5 years' time, or what you know, the old chestnut. What are you going to do about secondary? When you've got a 4-year-old, which, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about GCSEs?
Yeah, I was just about to say, I have a 4-year-old and I've lost count of the number of times I've been asked about GCSEs. It's like, what if GCSEs don't exist by the time he's 15 or however old? You know, things could completely change. So, I mean, the best that I can do when I have conversations with people is like, well, I could tell you what I think I would do if she was 14 now. Yeah. But otherwise, it will get there. If we get there, you know, yeah. By the time she's 14, she might be at the local comp. Who knows?
Yeah. That all sort of answers the how did you start home educating?
Yeah, just fluidly. I met a load of people and it opened my mind to the fact that we had options that I'd never even realised were really open to us until that point. So I'm just really grateful that those people came into our life, I think, and were able to let us see it in practice. Because I don't imagine that that I would ever have really considered it without having those people around me and be able to see it in action, actually what it looks like on a day-to-day basis for families that I know well. But I also do think social media...
Yeah.
For all of its sins, is certainly kind of lifting the lid on home education a little bit, in that suddenly you do get, albeit maybe a heavily filtered insight, but you do get an insight into the everyday lives of families who probably would have seemed quite obscure and odd to you previously. I wonder whether, even if I'd been following if I'd had Instagram and been following all of the home educating families that I follow now when Seb was in school, would I have had a little bit more of a broader idea of what my options were? I probably would. So I think social media has a huge part to play as well in opening up the home educating community to people who perhaps had no idea that it really existed.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, that's my experience. My experience was craft bloggers, because I followed loads of craft yeah. bloggers, and yeah. then they all started home educating, well, you know, homeschooling their children, because you know they were almost all American, and going, that looks amazing. I bet we can't do that here. Yeah. Oh, we can do that here. Oh, people do that around here. Oh,
yeah.
Maybe, oh no, we're doing this now, kind of thing.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think. I mean, I have lots of people who I'm in regular contact with on Instagram who don't home educate, aren't planning to home educate, but we have conversations all the time where they're genuinely like, I love seeing what you do, because it's just something that wouldn't perhaps be on their radar because it's not happening in their immediate communities that they're part of on a local level.
Yeah.
And so it's nice, I think, to be able to share that. And not that I'm on a mission to convert everybody to pulling their kids out of school, but just so that it's not something that people think is a bit odd and happens behind closed doors and they don't really have a full understanding of, because there are plenty of people out there who still think, as I did a few years ago, that home educators are doing the national curriculum at a desk and have a chalkboard in their dining room.
Yeah.
Although I do have a chalkboard in my dining room, but that's
we all have a chalkboard in our or a whiteboard we took behind something and bring out at times. But no, I do know what you mean. You're like, because there is that sense of like, if you know, and I think there's that sense a lot of the time in the home education community of like, if you're really going to do proper school from home with, and this is your break time and this is whatever, and you know, like, not bells necessarily, but your alarm goes off on your phone, send them to school, because it would be easier. Like, you know, the point of this is, you know, I mean, well, you know, this kind of segues into the next question, which is, when I ask you what you love about it, everybody always says the freedom, which is like the opposite of doing school at home, which is that we need, okay, we're now on this topic, we're doing really the Great Fire of London, like everyone else who's also six or whatever at this time.
Yeah, that's what we do in year one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you love about it?
I think it's just an incredible opportunity for us to be able to prioritize like our relationship in terms of our like parent-child relationship at this stage. Like, I imagine when I sent Seb off to school at this stage, and just the realization now that at the age that Quinn is now, we were spending the majority of the day, Monday to Friday, apart, like, staggers me now to think about it. Whereas Quinn and I still have so much opportunity for connection throughout the day, which I now really feel quite strongly is what a four-year-old thrives on and needs. So it's incredible for me to be able to give her that at this stage when I feel quite strongly that it's what she needs in life as a four-year-old child. The freedom thing, I've had a conversation with this quite recently with people just on like, what does it even mean? And we were saying, you know, it's, for most people, I think when they talk about the wonderful freedom that comes with home education, it's usually freedom for the parents more than like, oh, my children are free. It's like, because what does that really mean? But the freedom just to be able to make choices for your family. Yes. That you wouldn't be able to make. And not just the, oh, we can go on holiday in term time, which is obviously a perk. But if that's the only reason that you're home educating, it's probably not going to work out. I had a conversation with the school gates recently with a mum that I know who said, oh, she's got a son around Seb's age and also a daughter around Quinn's age. So we've got children at sort of similar stages.
Yeah.
So her daughter was starting reception. And she said, oh, are you still planning to home educate Quinn? You're not sending her? I said, no, we're still going for it. She's like, oh, brilliant. She went, I do wish that I could do that sometimes, because we could like go to Disneyland in February and it would be really quiet. I was like, you could, yeah, but but that was her number one. I wish I could home educate so I could go on holiday.
Yeah, you might like, find the everyday life is a bit more
complicated. That might wear thin pretty quickly.
I'm not sure that it balances out.
So yeah, I try to talk about that as little as possible because I don't want people to just think that all home educators are just sodding off on holiday when everyone else is in school and that's all it is. But we are able to make choices as a family that just wouldn't be available to us if both of our children were in school. And that's just a really lovely place to be. I don't want to talk about this as a positive because it's not necessarily a positive, but we as a unique family, we as a unique kind of family structure in that both of my children are from different relationships, so that adds a different layer to things.
Yeah.
Is that because I share custody of Seb with my ex-husband, we do still have a reasonable amount of time where him being in school doesn't infringe upon kind of things that we're able to do because we home educate, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So we do still have days during the week where I don't have school runs because Seb's at his dad's. So we kind of make the most of those pockets of time in terms of being able to make full use of what's available to us as home educators. So like this week we went to Legoland. It was good. It was dead.
Yeah, bet.
But it wasn't dead. There were people there, but it was things like seeing the queue rails in Legoland for like where you could queue if you went in the summer holidays.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my god, like
yeah, that epic long walk that you do when there's no one else there and you just get in and out of all these queues going, we would just be trudging.
This wouldn't work.
If it was August.
This would not work. So yeah, whilst I absolutely do not want to suggest that everybody home educate so that they can go to Legoland in September because it's warm but empty, I hate the word freedom because I find it really like flaky. But
I think, I mean, you were saying that sometimes it's less about the child's freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that home education, it depends on how, you know, on the choices that your family, any family has made. I don't mean your particular family, but any family has made or whatever. But one of the things I find is that there is freedom in that I can give them space during the day to play.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? We're not out the door at,
yeah,
at quarter and past eight and then and home and then tea and then.
Yeah.
Homework, and then you've got to go to bed because you're knackered, you know, like
definitely. And if plans change, it doesn't really matter, you know, like I might have planned to do something that most people would kind of tick off as being like very good, very educational, you know, but then something comes up and somebody says, well, we're gonna go for a picnic, do you want to join us, and we can just sack it off and go. And so I think more than freedom, I prefer to refer to it as flexibility, like just the flexibility to be able to follow a whim if we want to. We also really enjoy camping. And so we use that to be able to kind of get around and see new places, etc.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. We can be really flexible in how we do that. So, yeah, I'd say the flexibility more than the freedom, because I feel like I have to really check my privilege when I start talking about, oh, we're such a free family. It's a little bit like the overuse of the word wild, which I know is in my Instagram handle. But
it's but a word which have aged, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Just this idea of like, oh, my children aren't stuck in a school like all those poor detained children. Like, well, I've got one in school and you know what, he's doing okay. So
what's the hardest part?
For us, I think we live as a family on a really small budget anyway, so whilst I don't think that home education has to or even necessarily should cost an awful lot of money, we are doing it on a super low income at the moment. We had a pretty significant reduction in income in June, which was probably about the worst time that it could have come along. And it was a bit of a crisis point for us as a family, where there was a short period where I was like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do the home ed thing, because I was just looking at our family income and budgets and things. It's like, it's just not going to work without me having like a really typical 9-to-5 job outside of the house to balance the books, as it were. So that was really, really stressful. And we've found a groove now. But I think doing this on a very low income does come with its challenges, even if we are going to admit that it itself doesn't have to be a very expensive enterprise. You're still going to have, for the most part, one parent who isn't in a position to bring in as much money as they perhaps could. So that's been challenging,
yeah.
But we're definitely finding our way around it. And we're still enjoying ourselves. And I don't think it is going to be a huge problem. And then I think the other thing that's been hard has just been to let go of some of my preconceived ideas about education, because it's really easy for me to talk, when we were talking about how I came to home educate, it's really easy for me to say, oh, and then I met these people and it was fantastic and I saw how great it was and I was like, yeah, I want a slice of that, which is exactly what did happen. But I still come at it with a school background. And so to just let go of a lot of the ideas that I'd held up until that point is still an ongoing process. I grew up in a family that put quite a lot of value on academic performance, and not that home educated children don't excel in academics, because obviously many, many do. But just in terms of what I think it has to look like,
yeah,
to get to that point, is still an ongoing process for me to kind of let go of a lot of what I've always considered to be true about how children learn, what children need to do in order to learn, which I now know, and I'm very confident that I was wrong, but it's still there, if that makes sense.
The de-schooling of parents, or, you know, as a home education parent, like our schooling de-schooling process, I think is a really long one.
And it's harder than even if you pulled a child out of school, I think. It's really hard. Like I said, I grew up in a family where my academic performance as a child was something that I was really, really heavily praised on. I did very well at school, which isn't because I was better than any of the children, or that I had, I don't know, some extra incredible skills compared to them. I just learn in the way that school is set up for, and it was luck. My brain works well in that way, in terms of absorbing information and then spitting it back out, which is effectively what I needed. So I did really well on paper in school, and that attracted an awful lot of praise in my family because that's what was valued.
Yes.
So to let go of that now, and to recognize that it doesn't have to look like that, and that isn't what has to be held as the most important thing for us as parents, is ongoing. And it is challenging at times. And I definitely doubt myself sometimes. I'm like, am I just messing up her life? Like, is she going to come out of this, you know, with zero prospects? Which, of course, I know she won't. But you still have your moment.
Oh, yeah, God. Yeah, completely. Everyone doubts themselves at some point. I think that, I think one of the things that's difficult is we don't have the same measures, or is, you know, of what they are learning. If you're not writing everything down, you know, if you're having conversations instead of writing stuff down, then it's hard to, you don't have a thing to go through going, well, look, this is what they're like in January and this is what they're like in May or whatever.
And so
you have to be looking for, you're looking for changes, but those changes are incremental and slow. And so if you misinterpret them, or if you don't realize that sometimes these changes come in sort of spurts, where suddenly they didn't get this thing for a long time, and then suddenly it was, you took a break from it and it got easier. They grew up, they matured, and that suddenly became, you know, this issue was less of an issue now. If you don't realize that they come in sort of spurts at times, then like you've got nowhere.
And I think as well, you can be as confident in your choice as you like, but for most of us, we're still moving through communities in a society that doesn't quite get it yet.
Yep.
So you are going to constantly feel like you're justifying your decisions. And I do think that can chip away at you every now and again, because there is still a lot of, well, how's that going to help them? You know, like, yeah. I made the massive mistake of, we don't really watch TV, but there's a program that's been out recently that was kind of a like fly on the wall with an unschooling family. I don't know if you saw it. It was,
oh, no, I don't know about this.
Oh, you can imagine anyway.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's, what channel was it on? And I can extra imagine.
Yeah, it was on like one that you have to get through Virgin or something like that. So okay, not, yeah. But an advert popped up for it. So it was one of these, like, you know, a week with this family. It was a British unschooling family. I'm not that familiar with them, but anyway.
Yeah.
And obviously the advert to get people to watch it was edited in such a way that it looked like they were the absolute worst anyway. And I'm sure they're fantastic people. But I made the enormous error of reading the comments.
Oh no!
Which we know we should never do.
Yeah, but and because that is slightly magnetic.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I wonder what people are saying. Whoa, no! Why did I read? But actually, it does make you realise what we're doing is considered pretty nuts by a lot of people, and so you're always going to come across incidents where you do think maybe they're right. Maybe this is like, you know. Maybe I'm robbing my kids of a future, just like Keith from Manchester says on the internet.
Well, this is like the whole thing about, you know, when there was the government consultation, and one of the things that they were sort of umming and ahhing about is, well, maybe we should ask home ed kids if they want to be home educated. And then people on our local board were like, cool, they're going to ask all the school kids if they want to be in school as well. Like, you know, like it has to work both ways. If you want to know what a kid wants, like, do you really want to know what a kid wants? Because you might not like the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had like so we live in Kent. We live on the Kent coast. And so within the school system here, you have what's the 11 plus elsewhere in the country in some counties, but in Kent is the Kent test. So children take it in their last year of primary school, year six. Right. And it determines whether they meet the criteria for the grammar schools, right. Because we have free grammar schools in Kent rather than the fee paying. So you've got access to free grammar schools, but you've got to have passed the Kent test to get in.
Yeah.
If you don't pass it, you go to the comprehensives. I'm not going to get into how I feel about the Kent test because that's not where I'm going, but that's just for
some
Right. So we go to a forest school group. It's fantastic. It's a new forest school group. We've been going to quite a few since Quinn was tiny, but this particular one is a new one that's just been set up by friends of mine who have been clearing and working on this area of woodland in their village to facilitate a forest school. And a guy from the village sort of came down and was like, what are you doing here? You know, like, I've heard loads going on. And she said, we're going to be starting a forest school. And actually they're working alongside the village primary school as well, and the village school is going to be using it for forest school sessions for the school too.
Yeah.
But he was outraged, like absolutely disgusted. And forest school is something that I think is like quite widely accepted as positive even for school children, but no. he was absolutely outraged, and he said, how is running around in the forest playing going to help them to pass their Kent test? And it was like,
because like everything has to be done for that damn test.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, it was a moment for me where on the one hand, it was just funny.
Yeah.
It was really comical. And we've talked about it since, and I've related to people, and everybody has the same sort of amused response. But then also, it's just like, you suddenly realise that, because I speak to home educators all the time, we hang out with them, we go to groups, but actually there's a vast majority of people out there who think it's crazy.
Yeah.
And that we should just be prioritising the Fleming Kent test. So, yeah, I don't know, this radical idea that actually that's not all that I want for my child.
No, I know.
And to have the confidence to stand up for that, I think, is when it becomes difficult. Like how much justifying your choices can you take when nobody's having to do that about sending their kids to school, you know?
Yeah. The grandparents don't tend to spot check your child's ability to, do multiplication problems.
If they go to school. No, and equally, like, the nobody in the supermarket is asking your child what they learnt today at school. But
so how do you make that hard stuff less hard? I was going to say, how do you solve the problem? But you can't solve the problem. How do you make that hard stuff less hard?
I think it's just, like I said, it's a really ongoing process. So I'm giving myself some grace to kind of learn as we go, because I know that I'm not going to have all of the answers straight away, and that there's going to be moments where I completely doubt my decision and think, actually, do you know what? Maybe they're right. Maybe this is the worst thing that we've ever attempted to do for our kids, or child in the singular at the moment. But also, we're very lucky to have a great community around us as well, and I think that's really buoying, in that I'm able to lean on them when I wonder if we're doing the right thing, both online and in our immediate community as well. So I can kind of retreat back into my bubble with people who get it.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's really helpful. There's nothing wrong with of kind of entering your own echo chamber, as it were. And just kind of drawing upon people who completely support your decisions. We're lucky to have a supportive family as well. But and then in terms of the money side of things, which I mentioned first as being something that I maybe find quite challenging, we are just staying super resourceful with it. At the moment, we're really, really lucky that Quinn is the age that she is.
Yeah.
So actually, it's just been a bit of a continuation of what we were doing anyway. And we have had to completely readdress some things as a family, which have nothing to do with home education, just to generally bring our spending down. And so, like, up until the summer, I had a fantastic book buying habit. And as a result, we have a lovely book collection.
Yeah.
But it was just the realization of, like, I cannot afford to spank money on books every month. We have, like, neglected library membership, and we've just had to start maxing it out, which is actually a really good thing.
Yeah,
it's a really positive thing. So the home educating on a really low budget doesn't have to be miserable. It hasn't been miserable for us at all. It's actually given us the opportunity to rediscover a lot of things, actually, and to recognize what's really important. So yeah, we've been using the library loads. I've cut down on the car use massively, which has meant that we've started using, like, our local beaches more, because we're having more car-free days. We're really, really lucky to live by the coast, but it's something that's really easy to take for granted. So staying local more, and, like, just things like, we scaled back Quinn's birthday on such a huge level, because we had to completely kind of reconfigure our financial situation in June, and her birthday was in July. And we ended up just having this really, really lovely get-together with all of our friends in the forest that's, like, 5-minute walk from our house. And it was just one of those moments on the home education side of things where I was like, actually, we could probably completely ace this, because we do have stuff available on our doorstep for free.
Yeah.
That I kind of started taking for granted. But actually, like, that was a brilliant birthday party. And it's like, we've got the beaches, we've got the forest, we've got a library, which is actually very, very well stocked.
Yeah.
And so it's just having to be resourceful, and I'm not at the point where I'm worried about curriculums and things. So that's not a financial worry at the moment. And I'm not sure where we'll go down the line in terms of how much of that kind of thing we use. But for early years, I remember, a good friend of mine saying, when I was in this, like, panic stricken state of, like, oh, maybe I'm just going to have to send her to school because we're too poor. And she said, the only thing that you need to pull off a really good reception year is a library card and a pair of wellies.
And
it was like, you know what, you're right. And that's really stuck with me ever since. And so that's kind of the philosophy that we live by at the moment.
To be honest, you could do that for year one as well. I don't think, you know, like, what I mean?
And probably even beyond.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you... I think if you think of, like, a library card as, like, it isn't just picture books. This can also be, you know, like, this can also be some educationally books as we start to bring in, you know, more sort of informal, formal stuff.
And our library is great.
You know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It doesn't. It's not just your picture books and board books and things from the small kids area. And obviously, we've got various other facilities that come with the library as well. But Kent actually, as a whole, has a very good library service. I think we're quite lucky in that regard. So
yeah,
we they do a really good, like, we have a separate card as a home educating family, which comes with quite a lot of perks.
Oh, that's
which
good.
I've since learned not everybody has. In fact, I don't think many people outside of Kent do.
No, they
so
don't.
So I don't know. No. so that's quite cool. So I have, like, my library card, which has always been my library card, and Quinn yeah. has her, like, children's library card. But then we also have an additional library card, which is just for our home ed stuff.
Cool.
Which gives us, so you get 50 books per child, which is massive.
That's massive.
Yeah. So obviously I've just got the one child on there. So we can get 50 books out on the home ed card. And we also get free black and white printing, which is cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And a few other bits and bobs. Oh, and also we've got a much longer loan time. So any books that I get out on the home ed card, we get for 8 weeks.
That's fantastic.
So I can have 50 books for 8 weeks, basically, per child. So, yeah, so we're really lucky. Like, it's stupid not to make full use of it. And if anybody listens to this at a later date from Kent, they'll probably, their ears will prick, because Kent KCC, the local council, are really bad at making you aware that this is a thing.
Yeah, of course.
But if you do go into your library, if you happen to be in Kent and this is all complete news to you, and ask them if you can open a home education card. The librarians are fantastic. But if you go onto Kent County Council's website,
yes,
it's not on there. I've typed in Kent County Council Home Education Library, and it just comes up to tell you that basically they have lots of resource books in every library and magazines, and that you can get online to do work and what have you, but they do not mention anywhere the home education card. So yeah, if you're listening in Kent, just go and get one.
One of the things I want to actually put onto our blog is ring round all the councils and ask what they do, because every council does something different. Some do nothing. But do different things, so that we can just have a big table and you can look and see. But I haven't done that yet, because it's a lot of phone calls or a lot of emails. So but hopefully eventually that will happen.
Yeah, a lot of chasing responses as well.
Exactly, and double checking them to make sure that you have spoken to the right person and they haven't fobbed you off and said nothing, go away.
But if you could put that in one place as a resource, it would be.
Yeah, it seems like it would be
useful.
Yeah, because every person has. We don't always talk about libraries, but we quite often talk about libraries.
We talk about libraries a lot. Let's be honest. Yeah.
But I mean, on the podcast, it doesn't always come up in every conversation, but it does come up quite regularly. And people who get perks usually go, "We get perks. Let me tell you what goes on." Kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
So I do want to put it out there. Yeah. I think that I think as a home ed parent on a limited budget, which quite a lot of us are. You have to get used to sitting with the fear of missing out.
And
that's really hard.
And that's what I was going to come on to as well, was when we were talking earlier about Instagram being fantastic. Well, not just Instagram, but social media in general, and blogs and all of the sharing that comes with that. It's fantastic. And it has not only allowed home educating families to connect with one another, but it's just put home education out there in a way that's not terrifying people.
Yeah.
But it also, of course, just creates that sense of comparison that's almost inescapable. And of course, you're going to see what other families are doing and think, like, we're not doing that. And so you just, as you said, you've got to get comfortable with the idea of the fact that there are going to be limitations. And when I first started talking about this back in the summer, when like everything hit the fan and I was in a like, and I was relatively open about it, and I talked about it quite a lot. And so many of us were in the same boat.
Yeah.
But obviously it's a huge, huge privilege to be able to even consider home educating in the first place. But the number of people doing that from a relatively wealthy background is slim. Most people are struggling towards the end of the month, you know.
We don't live in a culture of single income households.
No, not at all. And
it's not set up to be single income households. It's not massively set up to be dual income households. Let's not be, you know. But it is set up to be sort of one and a half income households,
yeah,
where the mum still runs around and picks up and drops off and somehow gets a job that will fit all of that stuff in and the holidays. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. But so actually the number of people who I found who were in variations of our situation was really encouraging. But nobody was talking about it. Nobody was saying, do you know what, actually, like, this is really difficult. We've been late paying the council tax for the fifth month in a row because we're waiting for the next paycheck to come in because we're literally, you know, living from one month to the next. But nobody's really chatting about it. And I understand people don't necessarily want to, but I also think we need to kind of break down the myth that everybody's sort of doing this with an infinite bank balance, because I haven't really found anybody that is.
And the thing also is, like, when you're, say, if you're like scrolling your feed, you know, it's like, this is part of the problem of Instagram, is you get a collective idea of what everyone is doing. So this person has this new book, and this other person doesn't necessarily have that new book, but they have this other thing. And it might be that each person every 2 or 3 months has gone,
that's the
one new thing. And because of that, particularly if it's quite new and it's, you know, kind of therefore a bit prestigey, they're going to stick it on their thing to be like, look at me. Here's my little flat lay with, you know, the 2 or 3 wooden animals that I do have and, you know, the nice printout of the thing. And everyone goes, ooh. But if you see it in your scroll where it's like, this person's got this new book and this person's got this new curriculum and this person's got all these lovely wooden toys, you go.
But it also becomes.
It becomes a collection that you go, everyone has all of these things. Rather than each person has each, they have their one bit.
Yeah. And I don't, so I think I follow about 600 people on Instagram, to use Instagram as an example. Yeah. But those 600, well, not that they're all home educators, but let's say about 300 are, let's say half of them are. Yeah. So those 300 people become this one fictional person.
Yeah, totally. Who has everything.
Who has this combined lifestyle where they live on a homestead raising baby goats, but they also go to museums every week.
Yeah, they go to museums in the city, but they also live by the coast and they're in the highlands and they went abroad.
Yeah.
And they've got that book that everyone's talking about and that curriculum that everyone's going on about.
It's exhausting, if nothing else.
Yeah. And it's really hard.
But I don't really have the solution. I think we all say, it's very important not to compare yourself and comparison is the thief of joy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But actually none of us have really worked out how to stop doing it.
No. And we love shiny things.
We do.
And we all get hit from hitting that button that says, you know, buy this thing that has promised you it's going to be amazing. I mean, I would say, like, you know, talk to, just me, you, but the audience, talk to the people who've been home educating in your community for a while and ask them how much of their curriculum that they've bought they actually use, because we all have stuff that we thought was going to be fantastic. And to be honest, like, the thing is, then dig back into your curriculum and all the printables that you bought, because we all have, and see what you can use right now.
Yeah, you've probably already got so much. And that's like so we bought, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's a great cliche. We got Exploring Nature with Children.
Yep.
Like 18 months ago, maybe. Yep. And it's actually fantastic value anyway. It's not a super, super expensive product, but, and that's something, it's like, well, we've already got that. And she's 4. And like, that's great. Like, you know, we've got that. We've got a really good stash of books because I used to spend loads of money on books, but we've also got access to the great libraries as well. Like, we've kind of already got everything so that we really need, and the wellies are accounted for. Definitely, I think, look at what you've already got and what you can work with, not just in terms of what you own, but like what is in your area as well, because I speak to lots of people who are home edding, say in the city, who are really, well, not just home edding but parenting in general, but who are really worried that they potentially don't get their children out enough because they see everybody else hiking with kids, in the woods with kids, etc.
Yeah.
And it's like, but then you've got access to so much cool stuff in, let's say they're in London.
Yeah.
you know. So, okay, you may not be able to go to the beach a couple of times a week. I can, because I live in walking distance from the beach. So I'm going to make use of that, because that's the free resources that I have available. I also do not have like a wealth of different museums to visit. So it kind of all balances out.
And the thing is, if you do have museums, I think it's about thinking, because in Oxford, obviously, we do, but you have to think about them differently. You don't want to go and do like the entire museum in an afternoon and be like, well, we did that. We don't need to come back for 6 months. Sometimes it's like, no, go and see that one or two things that relate to the thing you were talking about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go and have a look at just the Egyptian stuff, if you're talking about Egyptian stuff, or just, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing, or just these couple of paintings, because you know they exist.
Yeah.
And then go home again. You don't have to do the whole thing. You can just explore it a bit at a time.
And then it's always there on your doorstep.
Yeah, because it's on your doorstep. You know, like, take advantage of that kind of thing.
Yeah, rather than like, oh, I've got to trudge around this museum again and we've seen everything. And...
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, that's really good advice.
So do you have a typical day in the life? Nobody has a typical day in the life, but do you have a typical day in the life?
Yeah, I mean, we have a loose structure that, say, like a weekday, it would typically follow, I guess. I mean, yes and no. So I think actually having Seb go to school, if it's a day where Seb is with us here at home and he's not with his dad, then our kind of earlier morning just revolves mostly around getting him out of the door. So whilst we definitely do not like ring a bell and start our home edding day, and I don't think we ever will, even when he's kind of schooly age, it's certainly a moment where he only goes to school around the corner, so he leaves the house on his own on his scooter and off he goes. And there's definitely a moment where we sort of close the door behind him and it feels like, okay, because Brad, my partner, has already left for work by this time and it's just me and Quinn left in the house. So that's definitely kind of a moment where it feels like things start for us in terms of her day. But we do get out to a couple of groups a week. So we always have a groupie get-togethery thing on a Monday and a Friday, both of which start in the morning. So it's kind of Seb out the door to school and then we get ourselves ready, make ourselves a lunch to take with us, etc., and jump in the car. We go to a farm school group on a Monday, which is effectively forest school, but on a farm.
Cool.
Yeah, which is great. So we do that on a Monday. And then on a Friday, we alternate because we have beach school, which is effectively forest school, but on a beach. Yeah. An actual forest school. So those are our Mondays and Fridays. So those days, once we've done that and we'll have lunch out, because the groups generally like 10 to 12 type timings, and we'll stay with friends and have lunch afterwards and come home. And then our afternoons are very much kind of at home. And I would see our rhythm as it develops and we kind of get more into a group of things with home ed, that we probably end up doing what a lot of people recognise as like the table-y work type, you know, sitting down to do stuff when we get there and we're at that point. Will probably be in the afternoons because our mornings are pretty full with outdoors, which is kind of back to front, I think, from what a lot of people do. But again, I don't say this is like, oh, I'm really worried that we're doing it wrong. But I think a lot of people kind of do their sit down and stuff in the morning and then they have the afternoon to get outside. We kind of do the opposite, but it seems to work for us at the moment. So when we get home, if it's a Monday, Friday, and we've been out all morning, we'll generally come back and that's when we'll kind of look at books together and do some bits and bobs in the garden. We do a lot of gardening and anything that we'll do kind of around the house together. But then the middle part of the week, particularly Tuesday, Wednesday, we stick around at home. I try not to use the car. So that's when we'll go to the library, go to the beach, meet up with friends, potter around in the woods, etc. For the duration of the day. And Thursday, so basically I've done a week in the life of rather than a day in the life of.
Yeah, that's okay.
So yeah, Tuesday, Wednesdays are pretty free-flowing and we just stick around. And then on a Thursday, I team up with a friend of mine who has the little girl the same age as Quim, who also hasn't started school. And we use, so the Exploring Nature with Children curriculum, we use that kind of together, and we get the two girls together and we loosely follow whatever the weekly topic is, and we have a nature walk Thursday, which is going well. And so that's kind of our week. So I just mainly, a typical day, I try and get us outdoors. That's my absolute priority, is basically to make sure we spend time outside.
Yeah.
And then we let whatever's going to happen, happen around that. But I'd say that our priority, kind of like once we're up and set out the door, and we're starting our day, is basically planning where we're going to go outside.
Yeah. So what's going on for home educators in your area?
We're so lucky. So we live on the East Kent coast, and that whole kind of area around Margate, Broadstairs, Ramsgate, all the way around to sort of Folkestone, that whole stretch. It's probably in part down to the fact that the East Kent coast has become really, really popular for families moving out of London.
Yeah.
I think that has contributed to the community somewhat, but not solely. It's always had a good home ed community, but I just think there are a lot of families moving into the area, and so you're starting to notice things springing up, and maybe there being more opportunities in the night. Those people who are moving out of London are generally middle class families who are interested in setting up groups and activities and get-togethers, etc. They're very socially mobile people, and that's been quite positive, I think, for the community as a whole. But you've also got some really long-standing groups that have been going absolutely, like, before my kids were born, and that's incredible to see. There's a group in my town that meet up every single week throughout the year, and just get together and hang out, basically. Sometimes it's indoors, sometimes it's outdoors, and then they'll go to the beach together, etc. But the guy who initially started it has only got one child left in school, who I think is now like 15, and all the others are now into adulthood, so it shows how long the group's been running.
Yeah.
And it's great, and it's still going really strong, and he's kind of taken a step back and let new people kind of take over with the organizing and the running of it, but it's still thriving, so it's fantastic. But yeah, you've got all sorts, and I think slightly because of, as I say, the area is being there are a lot of creative people moving into the area, and that's bringing a lot of opportunities in as well. So you've got things like pottery groups, art classes, that kind of thing springing up, which is fantastic. And we've got sports groups, which I don't make use of yet because I think Quinn's still probably a little bit little for like tennis, but it's there, but it's there. There's a home ed allotment group, so there's a lot going on, and we're only really starting to dip our toes because of Quinn's age, and her being like a summer baby as well, so she would be the absolute tiniest in reception if she'd gone. We're still kind of making use of a lot of our under fives groups that we've always gone to, and we'll make use of those for the rest of the year, but we're sort of in that in-betweeny stage at the moment where we can kind of still hang out with the preschoolers, but we want to make more use of the home ed groups as well. So we're just really, as I say, kind of dipping our toes into what's out there. And I'm mainly aware of it because I've got friends home-edding locally with much older children, so I know what they go to.
Yeah, totally.
So there's just loads on, and that's definitely a source of confidence for me, knowing that it's there, even if I'm not using a huge amount of it yet. I definitely plan to as she gets older. And it's definitely a real confidence boost just knowing that the opportunities are going to be there for us when we're ready to start making use of them.
Do you have any resource recommendations for other home ed parents?
Do you know what? I go back to the library card and Welly comment from earlier. Is that,
yeah, totally.
I definitely could. Like, I could sit and tell you what I love, but then at the same time, I don't want to add to that idea that there's anything that you really need. especially if you're at a similar stage to me. I'm certainly not in a position to start recommending people to recommending anything to people who are home educating their 9, 10, 11, 12 year olds, because you guys have got it covered. But certainly if you're kind of at the very beginning of your journey now, or you think that you might start home educating, say, next year, you've got preschoolers who are coming up to school age, I don't want to add to the idea that you need loads of stuff for your four-year-old.
Yeah.
So I would say that actually, rather than me recommend resources to you, I would leave you with the recommendation that you try not to think too much about resources. And that you just have a really good time, because that's like the absolute beauty of it. And what I said, like, right at the beginning of this conversation, really, as well, is that it's such an opportunity to just build your relationship with your children and be present with your children. They're not ever going to sit and look back and say, I'm so glad that mum bought me that pre-kindergarten maths curriculum.
Yeah.
Like, that was really, that was defining aspect of my childhood, and I'm so grateful for her for making those decisions. They're not going to remember the pre-K maths curriculum. And if you've got it, if you can buy it and you've got it and you have fun using it, that's great. I'm not putting it down.
No.
But don't think that you need it, because it's such a lovely opportunity just to hang out with your kids. And I'm still working on accepting that that's enough. Yeah. So I know that everybody else is as well.
I think that but also, yeah, I mean, library card and wellies. But also, if you're thinking of home educating, look at what's going on in your area, because there will be stuff that littler kids can go to.
Yeah,
or you
definitely.
Can be, you know, like, you know, as with your experience, go and talk to other home ed parents, because they're usually very, very happy to talk to kids with littlies and answer all your questions and whatever. And that's definitely. Probably, you know, better than you'll get. It'll answer more questions than any book will.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you can have all your specific questions answered.
Yeah. And if you're not sure what's on a local level, or you have had a look and there doesn't seem to be a lot, etc., then definitely tap into the online community as well.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I know, for example, that I am always more than happy to have messages from people whose children might only be, you know, like two, around that kind of like toddler preschooly age, but they're starting to think about what they're going to do in the next couple of years, and they've got questions, or they've got worries, or they just can't work out how XYZ is going to work.
Yeah.
I'm always more than happy to chat to people, and I'm pretty confident that a vast majority of other home educators are also more than happy to take a random unsolicited message in the inbox. everybody's pretty approachable that I've ever come across.
And if they don't know the answer, usually they know someone who does, and they can put you onto them or whatever, you know.
Definitely. So I know that not everybody even has access to a, and I know that that in itself can be a real worry as well. It's like, is there a community around you?
Yeah.
I'm in a really lucky position that there is a community around me.
I don't think that there are many places in the UK that don't have some sort of community.
There are not, but I do have a very good friend who I met online, and I love her to bits, and I'm sure she will listen to this, because when it comes out, she'll see it. But she has a daughter the same age as Quinn, so he should have started reception this year.
Yeah.
And she lives on one of the Scottish islands, I won't say which one, and she has just become the first home educator on the island.
Aww.
And I know, it's incredible. So and you can imagine, she experienced like an awful lot of not hostility, I don't think, but just people just really confused, just like, what do you mean? But I know for her it was a real worry at first, like in the last couple of years leading up to it. She knew that it was 100% what she wanted to do for her daughter.
Yeah.
She's just like, how am I going to pull this off on an island where nobody else is doing it? And thus far she's doing an amazing job. But I know that it is a worry for people. Also, I should mention as well, I know I'm going on, but on the community thing as well, Yes, find the home educators. Yes, go to the groups, hang out with them. But don't forget that you're allowed to hang out with school kids.
Oh, God, yeah, totally.
And I think people forget this. They're like, well, like, you know, when are they going to hang out with friends? It's like, you know that there's loads of, like, after-school clubs, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you can do your own thing 9 to 3, even if there aren't a huge number of home educated children in your immediate community. But you're still going to have the after-school sports clubs, even if you don't have home ed sports clubs. You're going to have Rainbows, Beavers, Cubs, Sea Cadets, Air Cadets, whatever you have locally, those kind of groups, which are generally populated by school kids, but they're going to be local school kids. So it's still going to give your kids an opportunity to meet people around them that they can hang out with. There's so much going on. You don't have to fit it in, like, during the school day.
No.
If you want to do a couple of clubs and they happen to be sort of 4 to 6 in the evening because they're tailored towards children who are in school all day, you're still doing it. They're still hanging out with other children. And I think people forget that as well.
Yeah, totally.
You know, dance classes, all of those sorts of things are usually at a time that they can be accessed by school children.
Yeah.
So they exist, and people need to remember that they exist and that they can use them.
Yeah, totally. Well, also, like, I found that, like you were saying about, like, toddler groups and things like that, particularly if you've only got, like, if your eldest would only just be going into reception, and maybe you've got a younger one as well, yeah, you can usually carry on hanging out with them. That's what we did.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I think most groups are really open to it.
Yeah.
So when we started going to the farm school group, for example, that was set up as a, like, parent-toddler group, under-5s group. But the lady who runs it, her eldest is the same age as Quinn, and he's going to be home educated. So he's going to be there because his mum runs the group. And we've carried on going as well. And there are a couple of others of that kind of age group. And since then, several other home educating families have kind of just started coming along because they've got a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
But they've just, like, bought their 9-year-old because it beats leaving them at home.
Yeah.
And actually, the 9-year-old has a great time, you know? So there's all sorts on. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to specifically be searching for, like, what is on for home educators and only home educators in my area. Totally. And if you've got bigger kids as well, like, think about some of the kind of adult groups, but what else is on, you know, are there, like, cool groups in the evening? Like at local adult education centres and stuff, because you'd be surprised actually how many of those will take kind of preteens and teens.
Yeah.
For, you know, and it could be anything. It could be cookery classes. It could be photography, languages, whatever. There's usually all sorts going on that they could tap into.
Yeah, totally. That's really good. Do you have any book recs for, like, read alouds and things?
All of them. we read so much. Obviously Quinn's not reading yet. Well, I say obviously, there are 4-year-olds that are reading. She's not one of them. She's not reading, so she's read 2. So whilst we sort of churn through picture books at an incredible rate, mainly thanks to the library, we are doing chapter books and things as well. She tends to just be kind of pottering around and doing her thing, drawing or what have you, while we're reading. So we've done kind of a lot of the kind of stereotypical read aloud books, I guess. I think, like, when it comes to chapter books, we started with Winnie the Pooh, which is where a lot of people start, I think. Everyone loves a bit of Winnie the Pooh. And we've kind of taken it from there in terms of what we're reading. So it's the kind of typical classics. We're really into the Moomin books as well. Like,
the Moomin books.
The chunkier, like, original ones, you know, that you can read as a chapter book. I know that they've since produced all sorts of kind of spin-off type picture books, which are cool too. But in terms of the chapter books, the original ones, we absolutely love those. So we read lots of those as well. We have, like, our book collection, if you look at our shelves, we have loads and loads of kids non-fiction, because I'm really into, like, really good kids non-fiction. And then we always kind of used to use the library for our picture books and bedtime reading and things like that, but then the books that we were buying was, like, the really nice quality nonfiction. Quinn's like mad into birds. That's her real thing.
Right.
She absolutely loves birds, and she just she can name God knows how many, etc. So we have a huge, huge bird book collection. And that's something, rather than initial, like, individual titles as well, when it comes to book recommendations, I would say, like, don't get sucked into the books that other people are telling you that are great if they're not going to be of interest to your child.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely fallen victim to that in the past, where I've, like, seen a book that everybody has bought on Instagram because it's just been published and it's great. And, like, she couldn't really care less. But I just felt like I should have it because it's a really lovely book.
Yeah.
And there are definitely books in our collection which are fantastic but of no interest to her. And so there's no shame in having, like, a huge bird book collection if that's their thing. And I can definitely, if people just want to hit me up for bird book recommendations, that's my speciality.
Excellent.
And we have lots of kind of nature-y theme, because that's a huge part of what we do and how we live. We have a huge kind of, like, nature-y and animal-y type theme running through our books as well. But yeah, I've got all sorts that I kind of think, like, why did I get this? Like, why did I think it was important for us to have this?
Yeah. That happens. It doesn't really.
Yeah, I think it does. And it just goes back to what we've spoken about quite a lot today, I think, of just, you don't need the stuff, and the stuff can actually start to really weigh you down eventually.
Yeah,
I think being able to take a step back and saying, okay, why do I feel like we need this, or why do I want this? You'll start to realize that actually your motivation for a lot of purchases can be quite suspect.
It doesn't take many of those sort of beautiful books that everyone else is going on about for you to have spent £50. You might not have spent it all in one go, but do you know what I mean? For you to look at a small pile of books and go, that's £50 there that actually we could have used to do something else that they really would have really enjoyed. And I say that as someone who adores books, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. But if you're buying brand new, then £50 in, say, your Waterstones or your independent bookshop or what have you, that's only a few books.
Yeah.
You think the average kind of hardback book, you're probably looking at about £15.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you've done £45 on three. So, yeah, whilst I could definitely recommend lots of books, it kind of goes back to recommending resources as well, is that I don't want to say to anybody that there are books that they need to have, because your child isn't my child.
Yeah.
Your budget isn't my budget. And the way that you live and read to your child is going to differ from how I do. So actually, like, just taking a little bit of time to really think about what you need rather than what anybody else is telling you you need or what you want. You'll end up with a book collection which might not look anything like mine or anything like anybody's that you've seen on Instagram, but it works beautifully for your children. And I think that's what's important.
Totally. What do you want someone who doesn't home educate to know about home education?
What do I want somebody who doesn't home educate to know about home education? I think that a vast, vast majority of families who've chosen to home educate, and I kind of separate those from people who have found themselves home educating almost against their will, because I do recognize that there's lots of those. So just talking about those families who have made a conscious decision to home educate, and that's their preference in terms of how their children are educated, that they haven't made that decision lightly.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people think that people have chosen home education in ignorance because they don't realise how great school is. And as yet, I haven't met a single person for whom that applies. And most people have agonized to some degree, even if it ended up being a relatively easy decision. I'd say it was an easy decision for us, in that by the time we got to it, it was 100% the right thing for us, and we felt very, very confident in that choice. But that's not to say that we didn't put an awful lot of thought and discussion into it beforehand. And I'm relatively confident that everybody else did also to a degree. But there seems to be this sort of, do they not realise X, Y, Z? It's like, I assure you that they have given this a lot more thought than you have.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
And that they're constantly...
It's not the easy path. It's not the path that's handed to you.
No, definitely not.
You know what I mean? So you can't you can't do it unconsciously.
No, you have got to have put a lot of thought in. Everybody who's home educating has at some point considered whether their children will be better off in school. Yeah. They will have. Even if the answer was a definite resounding no, absolutely, they will not be better off in school.
Yeah.
They have given it plenty of thought.
Yeah, totally.
And also, as a kind of spin-off from that, is that not every home educating family is anti-school, because I come across that a lot, even with a child in school. So I imagine it's a lot worse if you do not have a child in school.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of home educating families have had experiences of school at some point, and some haven't at all. But most that I speak to, a vast, vast majority, are very open to the fact that school can be a positive experience for some families.
Yeah.
And they don't want to tell you that you're making a huge mistake by sending your kids to school. And I do find that people can be quite defensive.
Yeah.
And I don't even think they mean to be, and I don't say that horribly.
No.
But that they just assume that your decision to home educate is a criticism of their decision to send their children to school, which it almost certainly is not.
Yeah, we're
it's
not.
It's like most parenting decisions, I think. Like, the decision to breastfeed isn't a criticism of the decision to use formula. The decision to wear your baby in a sling isn't a criticism of the family who prefer to use a pram, etc. And those are quite trivial, small, well, feeding's not the pram sling thing, maybe. Quite small, trivial things, but home education obviously is a slightly larger decision. But equally, it's not a criticism of the alternative.
No, you're not home educating at people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, because you wouldn't. You wouldn't put in all this effort or, you know, do all of this just to be like, I don't know, hey, look at me, I'm an extra cool parent or whatever. Because not all of it is cool. Not all of it is glamorous.
Yeah, exactly. Most of it isn't very glamorous.
No, not
at all. I haven't found many glamorous bits so far.
No, I think the closer you get to glamorous is the sort of is a beautiful home-ed sort of flat lay or something like that.
Yeah, but you can't see what's around it out of shot.
No.
No, exactly. So if I am kind of leaving an imparting impression upon anybody who isn't home educating, it's certainly that A, they've given it an awful lot of thought and they've arrived at this as certainly being the best decision for their family, but that doesn't mean that they have any ill feeling towards the very different decisions that you may have made for your children.
Yeah, completely. Where can people find you online?
So I've mentioned it a few times, but mostly on Instagram. It's got full stops in it because it's not very audio friendly. But it's the at symbol, of course, wild.wood.childhood. So there are dots between each word, wildwood, childhood. And I also, I do have a blog, and I'm now starting to use it an awful lot more now that we're kind of a little bit more active in the home education side of things, which is exactly the same, but just without the dots. So it's just wildwoodchildhood.com, but there's a link via the Instagram. So I would imagine people are just going to bounce over to Instagram if they're interested in following us or connecting with us in any way. You can get to the blog via the Instagram anyway.
I will put all of the links in the show notes.
Fantastic.
So there will be a link to both in the show notes.
Lovely. That's where we hang out, and we're there. We're there all the time. So and as I said earlier, like, perfectly approachable. So I very much welcome chat. I'm very good at chat. So by all means, get in touch.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It's been
That's okay. It's been really, really lovely to talk. I've really enjoyed it.
And there you go. If you want to find out more about any of the things we talk about in this episode, or to leave a comment, please go to the show notes on the blog at homeedvoices.co.uk, or follow the link on Instagram at homeedvoicespodcast, or Twitter at homeedvoices. This is episode 20. If you want to support the show, please rate and review at Apple Podcast, as it helps more people to find out about it. The Homeed Voices podcast is an independent production and is created, hosted and produced by me, Katie Hanrot. The podcast theme tune is Hope for Tomorrow by C-Stock. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher, YouTube or anywhere else where podcasts are found. I'll be back with episode 21 in 2 weeks, and until then, here's to more Homeed adventures.